Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Orson Welles and Rosemary DeCamp, please. Ladies and gentlemen, your guest producer, Mr. Frank Craven.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Between the peoples of the English-speaking world are, fortunately, many strong and common bonds. Respect for freedom and democracy, a sense of fair play, and a love of tolerance. And to those bonds, you may well add a common love of Dickens. There are many writers we pay homage to, but none has come as close to our hearts or moved us so thoroughly to tears and laughter as the author of tonight's great story, A Tale of Two Cities. And I say great, not from my judgment only, but because time and the world have called it so. And Dickens himself expressed the humble hope that posterity would consider it the best thing that he had ever written. For to him, it was an attempt to explain in terms of one man's life and actions one of the most inexplicable and violent periods of human history, the French Reign of Terror, when 25 million people armed with torch and saber bathed Europe in the blood of vengeance. Here, indeed, is the material of drama, recorded by a vivid and imaginative writer and portrayed for us tonight by two stars worthy of this staunch assignment, Orson Welles and Rosemary DeCamp, both veterans of this stage and of the screen and theater. Originally, most of Charles Dickens' works were published in installments and came to America by sailing vessels. Records tell us of how crowds thronged the wharves of New York City to receive the latest news of their favorite heroine or hero. For already the names of Dickens' characters were household words, as much, I imagine, as Lux toilet soap is a household word throughout America today, and for very much the same reason. The ability to find approval among people of all kinds of ages and in every walk of life. Not only among women who are anxious to preserve their loveliness, but with every member of the family, young and old, Lux toilet soap is quick to make friends and to keep them. And now our curtain rises on Europe 150 years ago as we bring you the first act of A Tale of Two Cities, starring Orson Welles as Sidney Carton and Rosemary DeCamp as Lucy Manette, with Dennis Green as Charles Darnay. Paris, 1793. The French Revolution is over. The cause is won, but the bloodshed has only started. The Reign of Terror sweeps through the land in all its fury, and each day Madame la Guillotine has fed her share of human life. The dripping blade rises and falls, and the crowd counts in monotonous rhythm as each noble head rolls to the ground. The knife rises again and sweeps downward. 22 lives in a single day, and more to come, and more until nightfall draws a curtain on the scene. Behind the bleak walls of the Fours prison, the doomed of the following day await their fate. In a bare dungeon cell, a single lantern throws a ghostly glow on their faces. With a rattle of chains, the great iron door is thrown open.
Everyone rise! Rise, aristocrats! In the name of the people of France, the tribunal hereby declares that you shall be put to death by the guillotine on the morning of February 2nd, 1793. Oh. Citizen jailer, which one of these is Charles Evremond?
Evremond! Step forward!
Evremond! Charles Evremond, call Charles Darnay. Which one of you is he?
I am Evremond.
Step forward. Charles Evremond, known as Charles Darnay. In view of the excitement occasioned by your trial, it was felt that some small favor would be in order. We have decided, therefore, that you shall live long enough to witness the execution of your friends here. 51 heads will fall tomorrow. Yours will be the 52nd.
Citizen Evremond.
Yes?
I didn't know you were here with us. It's so dark.
Oh, yes. What is it you want, please?
Don't you know me? I'm Lisette, the seamstress. We were brought to La Force together.
Oh, of course. I forget for the moment of what you were accused.
They accuse me of plotting. But I'm innocent. How could I plot against the Republic? I'm nothing. I'm no one.
Don't cry, child. It's too late for tears.
I try to be brave. Soon the morning will come. It's growing light even now.
You have an hour yet. Perhaps more. Ask God for courage.
Look, sun's rising. I'm afraid. Yet I'm glad. At least we can see again.
What is it?
You are not Evermore.
Shh.
You are not Charles Evermore.
Quiet.
I knew Charles Evermore. His eyes were blue and yours are brown. His hair was light and yours... Who are you?
Like you, I'm nobody. I'm nothing.
But you are going to die for him. Why, monsieur?
I could never make you understand.
But I could set you free. One word from me
and... You can't do that. You must...
Tell me about yourself.
How can I?
Oh, it would help so if you'd talk to me. Perhaps it would help you too, monsieur.
There's so much to tell. It all began so long ago.
When?
25 years ago. 1768. Have you ever been in England?
No, never.
There's a long hill on the Dover Road that sweeps down to the sea. It's a pleasant road on a summer day with the sun shining. A devil's own highway at night in the winter rain. On just that sort of night in 1768, a coach topped the rise of the hill. The mail, bound east for Dover.
Go on, get up there. Get up, get up!
Top of the hill, Tom. Better rest them for a moment.
Oh. We'll be lucky if we make the boat for Calais.
Listen, hear that? What do you say?
I say a horse at the canter coming up the hill after us.
I say a horse at a gallop. Oh, there. Stand or I'll fire. Who are you? What do you want?
Is that the Dover mail? I want a passenger.
What passenger?
Mr. Jarvis Lorry.
Keep where you are. Is there a gentleman named of Jarvis Lorry in the coach?
I'm Lorry. Who wants me?
It's me, Mr. Lorry. Jerry.
I know this messenger guard. There's nothing wrong.
I hope so, ain't. Hello, you. Come on at a foot pace.
Well, Jerry, what is it?
A dispatch, sir. Sent after you from London.
Be quick about reading it, sir. I don't like this.
It's not very long, you see. Wait at Dover for Mademoiselle. Very good. Jerry.
Yes, Mr. Lorry?
Ride back to London as fast as you can. Tell them my answer was recalled to life.
Recalled to life. That was Mr. Lorry's business that night. To recall to life a man who had been buried alive for 18 years, a prisoner of the French nobility. The man had escaped and was now hidden by friends in the village of Saint-Antoine. To that village went Mr. Lorry, to the wine shop of a certain Madame Defarge.
You are Madame Defarge?
I am.
My name is Jarvis Lorry. I've just arrived from London. This young lady with me is Miss Lucy Manette.
Good morning, mademoiselle.
Please tell us, is my father here? Is he safe?
Your father? There is no one here, mademoiselle.
But Mr. Lorry was told...
One moment, my child. Madame Defarge, perhaps I should have presented my credentials sooner. Recalled to life.
There is a man here. A man old beyond his years. A mender of shoes. Will you come this way? My husband and I have kept him locked in a room upstairs.
Did you say locked?
Yes.
Of his own desire?
Of his own necessity. He has lived too long alone. He would be afraid if his door was left unlatched.
Oh, Mr. Lorry, I'm frightened.
Hush, my dear.
Father.
Good day, Dr. Manette. You are hard at work.
Yes, I am working.
You have a visitor, doctor. Show him the shoe you are making. Now tell monsieur the maker's name.
You ask my name?
Yes.
105 North Tower.
That is all?
105 North Tower.
You see, monsieur, he remembers nothing.
Dr. Manette, do you remember nothing of me? Look at me. Is there no old banker, no old business rising in your mind? Think of England, a man who was your friend, Jarvis Lorry.
It's no use. This is what they have done to him.
Lucy, come here, my child.
Yes.
Now speak. Call him. Speak to him as you did long ago.
Father. Father.
Who is this?
Oh, Father.
Do you remember, Dr. Manette?
I remember a little girl with long golden hair. Ages, ages ago.
Oh. What was her name? Her name?
She laid her head upon my shoulder when they came for me that night. Don't let them take you, Father. Hush, my child. My baby. Lucy. Lucy.
They crossed the channel that night to a safe refuge in England. There for 5 years, the good doctor rested until at last his memory returned and he was well again. But now, in the English courts, a trial was in progress. A trial of a certain Charles Darnay, accused of plotting treason against His Majesty's government. Dr. Manette, called as a witness, sat with his daughter near the judge's bench. The court was hot, humid. Only one man seemed quite at ease. The assistant counsel for the prisoner. His court wig, dipped in a slovenly fashion over one eye. His court gown, stained with wine. His name, if anyone was interested, was Sidney Carton.
Carton, we must act quickly. With the evidence they presented, Darnay will hang by morning. Carton, do you hear me?
I hear you, Mr. Stryver.
Well, what shall I do?
If I were you, I should sit down.
Darnay is my client. I'm trying to protect him. I pay you well for your assistance, and I expect to have
you. You will have it, Mr. Stryver, when the time comes.
I see you've already had your bottle today.
Two, I believe.
Drunk. Always drunk. Carton, listen to me.
At the present time, I'm more interested in Dr. Manette.
Dr. Manette, to the stand. You are Dr. Manette?
I am.
Dr. Manette, the prisoner, Charles Darnay, has been accused of carrying secret messages from Louis of France to spies here in England. Look upon the prisoner. Have you ever seen him before?
I don't know.
Really? Is it not true, Dr. Manette, that the prisoner was a fellow passenger with you 5 years ago on a boat from Calais to Dover?
I cannot say. When I came from France that night, I had been newly released from a long imprisonment. I have little remembrance of the occasion. My mind was a blank for some time.
I see. Your daughter made the trip with you, did she not?
Yes.
And that will be all.
Are there any questions from the defense?
Any questions, Carton?
No questions.
No questions, Your Worship.
Miss Lucy Manette to the stand. And now, Miss Manette, look upon the prisoner, please. Have you ever seen him before?
Yes.
Where?
On board the packet boat you mentioned.
You spoke to him? You were friendly with him?
Yes.
Good. Now tell me, did he come aboard alone?
No, when the gentleman came on board...
Do you mean the prisoner?
Yes.
Then say the prisoner.
Oh. When the prisoner came on board, there were two gentlemen with him.
But these two did not make the crossing.
No.
Now tell me, did you see them give certain papers to the prisoner that night?
No.
You're sure of that?
I don't know. It was dark.
Then they might have given him certain papers. Is that right?
Yes, but I...
And that will be all, Miss Manette.
Please, I know he isn't guilty.
That will be all, please.
Are there any questions from the defense?
Well, Carton?
No.
Carton, you're mad.
No questions.
No questions, Your Worship.
Your Worship, the prosecution would like to recall its chief witness, the prisoner's accuser, Mr. John Barsett.
Now, Stryver, we might have some questions.
Mr. John Barsett?
Right here, sir.
Mr. Barsett, look upon the prisoner. Do you recognize him?
I do, sir. He's a spy against His Majesty's government. That's what he is. I was on that mail packet myself that night, and I saw the kind of papers that passed into the hands of the prisoner. They were lists of our troops.
Thank you, Mr. Barsett. And no more questions.
The counsel for defense?
Well, Carton?
Ask him these questions I've written down here.
Mr. Barsett, how do you know the papers you saw were lists of British soldiers?
I saw them.
Ah, you saw them. Then you took them out of the pockets of the prisoner, Charles Darnay.
Yes, sir. No, sir. They fell out, they did.
Oh, then you didn't take them. You're not a spy yourself. A man who makes his living by making accusations, just or otherwise, against his fellow countrymen.
That's a lie, a downright insinuating lie.
One moment. Will Carton?
Mr. Stryver, you've no imagination. Mr. Barsad, where did you get money to live on?
My property.
Your property? Where is it?
I don't exactly remember.
Then perhaps you can remember how you got that property.
I inherited it.
From whom?
From relatives. Distant relatives.
How many times have you been in prison? 6 times, isn't it?
What's that got to do with it?
Ever been kicked at cheating dice?
Well, now,
Mr. Barsad, you are positive it was the prisoner you saw that night with those lists.
I am?
It couldn't possibly have been someone else.
No, it couldn't.
Mr. Darnay, you will please face this witness. Now, Mr. Barsad, look at Mr. Darnay. Look at him carefully.
Well?
Now, Mr. Barsad, look at me. At me, the assistant counsel for the defense. You notice a resemblance between us. We are very much alike, are we not?
Well, now that you mention it, you are.
As a matter of fact, it could have been me you saw with those supposed lists that night, could it not?
Well, now,
Could it not, Mr. Barsad?
All right. Yes.
That's all. Thank you.
Order! Order! Are there any more questions? The jury will retire to consider its verdict. Has the jury agreed?
We have, Your Worship.
And how do you find the prisoner, Charles Darnay?
We find the prisoner not guilty.
Mr. Darnay, may we congratulate you, sir?
Thank you, Doctor.
I'm happy our testimony did you no harm.
Thank you, Miss Lucy. I'm sure it did nothing but good.
It was Mr. Carton who really won your case.
Mr. Carton? Mr. Carton, sir.
Someone call me.
May I thank you, sir, for saving my life?
Yes, only a part of my business.
Mr. Carton, this is Dr. Manette and Miss Lucy Manette.
Mr. Carton.
How do you do?
Oh, we thought you were splendid, Mr. Carton.
Mere professional claptrap.
Ah.
May I ask, sir, how did you happen to notice the resemblance between you and me?
Oh, it was very simple. I looked at you and admired your bearing and your character. You see, I have nothing but admiration for myself.
Lucy, my dear, we must go.
Goodbye, Mr. Darnay. Will you call at our house soon?
Thank you, Miss Lucy.
And Mr. Carton.
Aye?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good day, then.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good day, Doctor. Mr. Carton, would you care to dine with me?
Oh, you feel you must repay me.
I could never repay you for my life, sir.
Oh, don't be too certain. Bottle of wine or two? My fees are very low. Another glass, Mr. Darnay.
Thank you. I've had enough.
Yeah, Mr. Darnay. How does it feel to be alive again instead of hanging by your neck?
Well, I'm a little confused regarding time and place, but it's good to feel at home in the world again.
Oh, it must be an immense satisfaction. For me, the world has very little to offer, except wine like this. So, you and I are not very much alike in that particular, are we? You speak very faintly, Mr. Darnay.
I didn't speak at all, sir.
Oh, come, Mr. Darnay, call a health. Propose your toast.
What toast, sir?
Oh, it's on the tip of your tongue, man. It's been there all evening. Out with it.
Very well, then. To Miss Lucy Manette.
Miss Manette. That's a fair young lady to hand into a coach in the dark, eh, Mr. Darnay? That's a fair young lady to be pitied by and wept for by. How does it feel, Mr. Darnay? Is it worth being tried for one's life to be the object of such sympathy and compassion?
I don't take your meaning, sir.
Mr. Darnay, let me ask you a question. Do you think I particularly like you?
You've acted as if you do, but I don't think you do.
I don't think I do either.
Nevertheless, I hope there's nothing in that dislike to prevent my calling for the reckoning and parting without ill blood.
Oh, of course, there's nothing at all. You call the whole reckoning?
If I may, sir.
In that case, innkeeper, more wine.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Mr. Carton.
There you go. One last word, Mr. Darnay. You think I am drunk?
I think you have been drinking, Mr. Carton.
You know I have been drinking.
Well, since I must say so, I know it.
You shall likewise know why. Because I care for no man on earth. No man on earth cares for me.
Much to be regretted. You might have used your talents better.
Maybe so, Mr. Darnay. Maybe not.
Good night, sir.
Right. And don't let your sober face elate you. Never know what it may come to. The innkeeper, the wine.
Coming, sir.
Well, Carton. Has Mr. Darnay shown you what you've fallen away from? What you might have been? Change places with him, and would you have been looked at by those blue eyes as he was? Come on. Have it out in plain words. You hate the fellow. Sidney Carton knew it was too late to change his way of life. But he took to brushing his shabby coat and combing his untidy hair. And there were times even when he remembered that a gentleman does not drink himself nightly into a stupor. On Sunday afternoons, he would appear in Miss Manette's garden, sitting quietly, speaking but seldom, for Charles Darnay was there too. One evening, just at dusk, an approaching storm sent them indoors.
Listen, it's coming soon, Mr. Darnay.
It comes slowly but surely.
Isn't it impressive? Sometimes when I've sat here of an evening like this, listening to the thunder in the distance, I've had such a strange fancy. I've imagined that the thunderclaps were echoes. The echoes of footsteps that will one day enter our lives.
Well, if that is so, there is a great crowd coming into our lives. I take them into mine gladly.
It was my foolish fancy, Mr. Carton.
Well, there is a great crowd bearing down upon us now. Thousands upon thousands. Here they come. Fast. Fierce. Furious.
Oh, you make my fancy seem too real, Mr. Carton.
There was a great crowd coming into their lives. A numberless, overpowering crowd, which one day would decide the fate of these three. At first, it was but a whisper in the city of Paris. A whisper that was to grow with the years into a crashing roar of hatred. Slowly but surely, as the storm came, the crowd was coming too. Up from the cellars of Paris, up from the bare fields of a starving peasantry, the crowd was coming, chanting its hate, screaming for blood. The people of France in all their might, rising in revolution.
In just a moment, Frank Craven and our stars Orson Welles and Rosemary DeCamp will return in Act Two of A Tale of Two Cities. And now, here's a dance floor. Music. A soldier and his girl.
Did I ever dream this afternoon I'd be dancing with you tonight, Bill? I just couldn't believe it when you phoned me from the station.
Gosh, what a thrill seeing you. You're prettier than ever, Mary.
You're sweet to say that, Bill. And me wearing my old rainy day dress. I'd planned to wear a real glamour gown for our first date.
Well, you look like a glamour girl to me, Mary. With those eyes and that peaches and cream skin. Say, I wouldn't care if you were wearing blue jeans, darling.
It takes a lovely luxe complexion to win a compliment like that. There's something irresistible about soft, smooth skin. That's why screen stars, lovely women everywhere, never take chances with complexion beauty. They've discovered a care so simple, so effective, that they use it regularly. Here's what pretty Ann Baxter says.
I wouldn't dream of neglecting my daily Lux toilet soap facials. Active lather leaves my skin so soft and fresh.
Lux toilet soap is a real beauty soap, you see. The gentle, extra creamy lather is right for delicate skin.
Feels like smoothing beauty in when you cover your face with the rich Lux soap lather. I work it in gently, but thoroughly. I rinse with warm water, then splash with cold, and pat my face dry with a soft towel. That's my beauty facial. It really does things for my skin.
Why not try these Hollywood beauty facials famous screen stars use? They really make skin lovelier. Recent tests showed actually 3 out of 4 complexions improved in a short time with this daily Lux soap care. Remember, gentle Lux toilet soap is Hollywood's own complexion soap. We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
2 of A Tale of Two Cities, starring Orson Welles as Sidney Carton and Rosemary DeCamp as Lucy Manette. In La Force prison, awaiting death by the guillotine, the man called Darnay continues his story. The little seamstress, condemned to die with him within the hour, listens quietly, her eyes fixed on his face.
As time went on, Sidney Carton appeared less and less frequently in the Manette home. For he knew that Lucy loved Charles Darnay. It was an evening in April, almost 10 years ago, that Charles Darnay spoke to Lucy's father.
I've only hinted at marriage to Lucy, sir. I didn't want to speak until... Well, there are certain things about myself that you should know.
Yes?
Dr. Manette, my name is not Darnay. I chose that name when I first left France and my heritage.
Heritage?
I'm of noble birth, sir, but I do not boast of it. Through generations, my family gained its wealth at the expense of the poor. When my uncle died, I was the sole remaining heir. I returned to France to sign away my title to the estate.
Why do you tell me this?
Because, sir, I know what you have suffered at the hands of the French aristocracy.
Your uncle's name and yours, what was it?
Saint-Evrémonde, the Marquis Saint-Evrémonde. He was... Doctor, you're ill, sir.
No. Charles, Lucy is not to know what you have just told me.
Not now, do you mean?
Not now or ever. She is not to know. Your word.
Very well, Doctor. You have my word.
Now go, please. Go. Saint-Evrémonde. Saint-Evrémonde.
Father. Father, let me in. Father, it's Lucy. Let me in. Oh, please.
Lucy, what is it? What's the trouble?
Sidney.
I got your message. Is anything wrong?
It's Father. He's been locked in his room all day. I'm so afraid.
Dr. Manette, open the door. Dr. Manette.
Miss Lucy, I found a key in the storeroom.
Well, give it to me and take Miss Lucy downstairs.
Oh, yes, sir. Come, my dear. Come, my lady bird.
Dr. Manette. Dr. Manette, what are you doing? Do you hear me? Doctor, what work is this you're doing?
A lady's shoe. A young lady's walking shoe. It should be finished. Let me be.
Sidney, is he all right?
He's all right. Dr. Jimson is with him.
Oh, you've been very kind to stay so long. I tried to reach Charles, but he wasn't at home. So worried.
There's nothing to worry about now. A few days and he'll be well again.
But what could have caused it? After all these years, to go back to that. What happened to him?
How can we know? A shock, perhaps some sudden jolt of memory. Man's mind can play queer tricks, you know.
Miss Lucy.
Yes?
I brought you a cup of chocolate.
Oh, thank you, Miss Pross.
And the doctor says everything will be all right. You're not to worry.
Oh, thank you.
Well?
Oh, Sidney, you're not leaving.
It's growing late. Not for me, of course, but I doubt if you see the dawn very often.
No, I don't. But I can welcome it today. A few hours ago, everything was so black and fearsome, and now all my troubles are past. All my hopes reborn. It's always that way, isn't it?
There are some hopes a man may have which remain in the shadows forever.
Oh, do you have such hopes, Sidney?
No more. I'm like one who died young.
Sidney, you've come often to the house in the past few months, and yet we know very little about you, except that you're our friend. Is there nothing I can do to help you, Sidney?
I could never hope to repay what you've already done. May I tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
Will you hear me without shrinking from me?
What is it?
You've been the last dream of my soul. Seeing you here in your home has stirred old shadows that I thought had died out of me. I've heard whispers from old voices impelling me upward that I thought was silent forever. I've had unformed ideas of striving afresh, fighting out the abandoned fight. It's a dream. All a dream, but I wish you to know that you inspired it.
Oh, Sidney, will nothing of it remain?
Perhaps as a dream might linger on after the dreamer awakes. But try to hold me in your mind as sincere in this one thing. I would embrace any sacrifice for you, or for those dear to you. Think now and then that there's a man who would give his life to keep a life you love beside you. A poor fool, Carton. Drunk. Drunk this time with self-pity. And from that day on, he was seen